This edition of the week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels. Welcome to The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. This week, senior editor Brendan Marr speaks to Gordana Vanyakhno-Vakovic, author of a feature in our September issue. Tissue engineering's most formidable challenge, says Vanyakhno-Vakovic, is mimicking the environment in which tissues grow naturally. Here she tells us how the work toward overcoming that challenge could change the face of transplant medicine and also how it is growing new and exciting collaborations.
This is Brendan Marr, The Scientist, and I'm talking with Gordana Vanyakhno-Vakovic of Columbia University. Thank you for taking some time to talk with us, Gordana. Tissue engineering applications appear to be increasingly relevant clinically. What are some of the places where the field has made some real progress?
There are quite a few areas. I think one big important area is that related to relatively thin or avascular tissues, tissues that don't normally contain blood vessels. The importance of this is that these are the tissues where vascular supply, blood supply, is not really critical for maintaining the viability and function of the cells. Examples of these tissues include skin, which was, in fact, the very first tissue that was engineered in a way, and this dates from early 80s, and more recently bladder, that was a very big success, and this is one whole organ, in fact, that is now at the stage of clinical trials. This actually tells us that by selecting these thin or non-vascularized tissues, people somehow avoided one very major problem that we are still facing, and this is the problem of building a functional vascular network within engineered tissues and making it in a way that it can connect to the vasculature of the host so that the blood is really pumped through the vasculature. The other area is, if I can try to generalize a little, the one that the tissues that actually regenerate relatively well by mobilizing endogenous cells. So bone would be a good example. Bone already has a source of cells within our body. So we do not deal with the other major problem of tissue engineering today, which is an adequate cell source. So what you do with bone, we still cannot do with brain or pancreas or some other tissues that do not have this capacity for endogenous repair.
So where is the benchwork taking us?
These days, we are really working towards the next step of tissue engineering, which is engineering of more complex tissue structures and engineering of tissues for which we really need to figure out how to establish cell sources, either using stem cells or some other cells that are now being considered for medical application.
You write in our September issue about work regenerating cardiac muscle. How do you see that playing out in a clinical setting?
Our idea is actually to grow quickly, within short period of time, a cardiac patch that's synchronously contractile and that is built so that it can induce or at least assist the regeneration of the damaged heart muscle. So what we do is actually we load the heart cells onto a biomaterial patch, and then we grow these cells in vitro over a relatively short period of time. Currently, we can do it within about 8 days. And the result of this is an immature but already functional cardiac tissue that we see applied as a patch overlaid over infarcted heart muscle.
So tell me what it really takes to give these constructs a pulse.
During the development of the heart, electrical signals that are spreading over the heart tissue and the resulting coupling, electromechanical coupling, is something that pretty much transforms a sort of a population of cells into functionally assembled tissue. And our idea was that actually these signals, that the physical signals that exist in the normal heart, should have a beneficial effect in coaching our cells to work together. And we saw that actually this is in fact true. So electrical stimulation during culture turned out to be very important, if not determining factor, in the functional assembly of the tissue.
What's been the biggest surprise in this research so far?
One thing is really was a big surprise to us, and we learned that actually cells, living cells, have a phenomenal capability to actually utilize the cues that you give them, the signals that you give them. You don't really have to do everything right, fortunately. And much of the success of some of our in vitro culture methods is really due to the great capacity of the cells to use what is available, rather than to our great knowledge about all factors that need to be provided.
So what's the next step in bringing this to the clinic?
The next step is much, much more difficult. What we are trying to do now is actually to scale this up, to extend these methods that worked with already differentiated heart cell populations into the cells that still need to become cardiogenic. So we are experimenting with many different sources of cardiogenic cells. So we are experimenting with stem cells and trying to understand how can we make these cells differentiate in the right time, during the right time, in the right way, into specific cardiac phenotypes, cardiac and vascular phenotypes. And this is something that's very difficult to do, and this is something that actually is the beauty and of the field, that actually really also drives the interdisciplinary work.
You noted in your article about the importance of collaboration. How has that been playing out?
So we've been looking for a dialogue with developmental biologists for a very long time. And I think for a very long time we were not ready for this dialogue. And now I think we are ready, and we are in fact many of us are starting to collaborate very closely with developmental biologists in this sense. Now, it's a mutual need, because what turns out to be the case is that the systems that we use to engineer tissues are actually excellent, very high fidelity model systems for fundamental biological research. So what I'm trying to say is that traditionally, over the last, how many, like 150 years since Julius Petri invented these dishes, you probably know he was a Robert Koch technician, and so the Petri dish cultures are about 100 plus years old. In Petri dishes, cells are being cultured attached to a flat plastic. This is not normal state of the cells. This is not how cells exist in our body. So you may imagine that actually cell being surrounded by other cells, being surrounded by components of extracellular matrix such as collagens and elastins and minerals and other components that exist in the body, would be in a much more physiologically relevant environment, native-like environment. And then if this is the case, then the response of these cells to a specific stimulus that you apply would probably be more physiologic. So the last couple of years, you can see papers, some of which are written by fundamental biologists, such as cancer biologists, that are entitled Goodbye flat biology being biology of Petri dishes, and then you see our colleagues biologists advocating the need to study cell responses to gradients rather than constant levels of factors, to combinations of factors, and to do studies whenever appropriate in three-dimensional settings. So, I mean, I'm talking about this for a long time, but I'm really excited that we are working with developmental biologists, with immunologists, with people who understand the adult biology of tissue repair, and you can see this in many different ways. Both fields are really ready for the next step and in the need of this next step, and we are more and more speaking the same language and very efficiently communicating with each other and sharing the methods and concepts and technologies much more than ever before, I think.
I want to thank you again for taking some time to talk with us. This has been Gordana Vunjak-Novakovic of Columbia University, and I'm Brendan Marr, The Scientist, signing out.
Join us online at www.the-scientist.com for more of The Scientist Daily News, blogs on current events, controversies, and conferences, and features from our September print edition. This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Gibco cell culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.